from LPM.
Louisville Public Media.
Support for LPM podcasts comes from the Eye Care Institute and Butchertown Clinical Trials, where they strive for diversity, equity, and inclusion within their staff, patients, and clinical trial participants. To learn more, visit butchertown.clinic.
I'm Michelle Tyrene Johnson. Welcome to Race Unwrapped, a podcast unwrapping all the ways race affects our world, whether we're thinking about it or not. My guest this episode is Sadiqua Reynolds. She's the president and CEO of the Louisville Urban League and has been on the front lines of protest in Louisville this summer. We talk about the pandemic, Breonna Taylor, and the elections. That's all coming up on Race Unwrapped from Louisville Public Media. Welcome to Race Unwrapped. I'm Michelle Tyrene Johnson. My guest today is Sadiqua Reynolds, president and CEO of the Louisville Urban League. So I'm just going to jump right in. So the Breonna Taylor killing is such a tragedy and a passion point for so many Black women. You know, usually it's the death of Black men at the hands of the police to get so much attention and attraction from the media and from people's conversations. What do you think is different about the Breonna Taylor case?
Oh, I think there are a lot of things that were different about Breonna Taylor that made this case one that the entire country really rallied behind. First of all, I think it was the timing of it. And timing could have been a horrible thing because of COVID. You know, we were right at the top of COVID when they killed her. But also because of COVID, people were sitting in their homes. We were all at home trying to figure the world out, and people had time to watch over and over again what was going on in our country. And so tie that to Ahmaud Arbery, tie that to George Floyd and Breonna Taylor, and it was just this overwhelming sense of something has got to give. So I think the timing of it was huge. I think the fact that we were in a pandemic when the entire country was saying we should be so thankful for essential workers, and she was an essential worker. And then we see this essential worker's life taken from her and really the police not being held accountable. So I think that had something to do with it. I think the other woman who really is very important to her story is Breonna's mother. Mm-hmm. Tamika Palmer would not let it die. I mean, this is a mother who said, I will not allow you to say who my child was. I will not allow you to kill my child with no repercussions. This is not going to happen. And so she did everything she had to do to ensure that her daughter's story was told and to push for justice in the case. And I think we can never lose sight of that as well. So I think there were lots of things about it, about the Breonna Taylor case that made it one that the country couldn't turn its back on. And certainly Louisville couldn't ignore.
And that really is so big, because the power of the Black mama, I mean, it's both a reality and a stereotype, if you know what I mean, right? You know, for those of us who are Black, it's a reality.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I think about this mother. I think about her. I think about my own mother when she was alive, how when I was going home, she'd say, call me when you get there. Really, when I was going anywhere. Call me when you get there. And there's this sense of relief, you know, when your child arrives wherever it is they were, you know, planning to go. And so even now I'm a mother, I have, you know, two teenage daughters, and I say, let me know you made it safely, wherever that safe place is. And so to think that your daughter is working in a hospital during a pandemic, around people who have been exposed to this virus. And, you know, Tamika Palmer has talked about the fact that she was so worried about her daughter, you know, catching COVID. And she told the girl, you know, Breonna, wash your hands, to the point where it was really getting on Breonna's nerves. She's like, Mama, I know. And so you tell her, you know, wash your hands and call me when you get there. And then your child arrives at home, right, and has dinner with the boyfriend, only later for you to get the call that she's been killed, only later for you to find out that the people who you pay taxes to serve and protect, your child and you, have been the ones who killed her. I mean, that is, it is every mother's nightmare. And then to have no justice on the other side of that. And some people may think that that $12 million settlement is something close to justice. It is not. There is no amount of money that any of us would pay to exchange for someone we love as much as she loved her child, as much as most mothers love their children. So I think that this case, again, it is one of those things that just sits with us because we understand, I mean, I understand as a Black woman that it is really just the grace of God that has separated me from Brianna. I mean, 20 something years old, and you know, they talk about the guy she used to date. And you think about, I mean, and this is probably surely for white women, they have to think about some of the men and some of the people they've had in their lives and what could have been if you had these overzealous, unlawful police officers enter the scene.
I mean, that's totally the case. I'm 55, and my mother, I think, with each passing year, has more of that. I mean, it makes me laugh how she's like, this is what you just said. Call me when you get there. Call me when you get there. Doesn't matter where I'm going. Doesn't matter what continent I'm going to. It's like, you got to let me know that you got there safely. Because I can only imagine, while that's a parent thing, that's particularly a Black mama thing. Because we know.
Yes. You yeah, know? We know.
We know. You know, on the same topic, I've noted that as part of all the protests and things and the action going on around the protests, the two of the most prominent Black women in this were arrested. You know, you got Representative Attica Scott and then Mama Rosie Henderson. And I'm calling her Mama Rosie Henderson. I've never even met her, but just from what everybody has said about her, do you think that's a coincidence?
Oh, no, I don't think there are any coincidences. I definitely think that the night Attica Scott was arrested, she was being targeted. I mean, she was arrested before the curfew. They surrounded her. And with her was Shamika Parrish Wright. And Shamika is not to be underestimated in this movement. Shamika has actually been out there every day more consistently than I would say any woman or man in this movement. She's been out there from the beginning. And so I think they targeted them to make an example, and it hasn't worked out so well. It just has not worked out so well. And then with Rosie, I think that her arrest was more emotional on the part of the officers, quite frankly. Mm. I don't think it was as calculated. If I from the videos that I have seen, I think that was a very emotionally charged situation. And that just got out of hand and they arrested her. I think they probably didn't want to have to do that. And if they had been thinking clearly, would not have done that, actually, because I don't think it was a good move for police. If they're looking for some good PR right now, they're not doing a good job of that. But that being said, I absolutely believe that Shamika and Representative Scott were targeted. And again, that is not going to work out well for police as it relates to PR.
I mean, and don't you think for Black women, I mean, already we see it happening even with, you know, Senator Kamala Harris as the mm-hmm. as the Democratic VP. I literally just saw a story yesterday that said that the GOP and Trump, that his tactic is now going to be to focus more on Harris than on Biden himself. And I'm like, why? What do you think that's about?
So it's always about demonizing us and reminding us of our place. And we're easy targets because very rarely is anyone out here attempting to protect us. I mean, I will always go back to imagining the slave who gets the master's knock on the door of the cabin and has to choose who goes to the door, my son or my daughter. So in one case, if you send the son, you're afraid that he'll be killed. And with the daughter, she would just be raped. And so we have constantly sacrificed ourselves in order to survive. And we have always, I think, stood in the back, sort of unprotected. And so white America knows that. They see that. And Trump is a misogynist. He is a racist. He comes across as all of those things. So why wouldn't he attack Harris? Why wouldn't that be easier? You know, why is it that when she is debating she has to remember to constantly smile so that she's not intimidating to anyone who, you know, any potential voter. She has to be careful not to come across as angry. You know, she has to manage all of these things, even managing her intellect, right? Not wanting to come across as too intelligent. Mm-hmm. I mean, this woman is brilliant, whether you agree with her or not. She's a smart woman. And so even having to manage your assets in order not to make some small man feel smaller. I mean, that's what we do every single day. And it is unfortunate, but it is the world that we live in. And I want to say something else about Rosie's arrest. It is important for us to note that Rosie in that square, she was really arrested in an attempt, her attempt to protect Black men.
Yep. I could see that from the video. Exactly.
Yes.
And what I also noted in the video, at least the one I saw, I've only seen one of them, is that the person who was being the biggest instigator, the person
was a white male. Was a white male. And the white and the officer, and this is a fundamental problem that I have with the video. I like everybody I look at and go, oh, the officer was being so nice. I don't know why they got so, you know, and then there's a part of me that says, listen, they're playing basketball in the right lane. There's not traffic. You don't even really see traffic coming by as they're making the video, as they're debating. And listen, we're in a pandemic. It's not like downtown is full of traffic or full of anything. Maybe he should have left them alone. But then I say, okay, no, Sadiq, well, be fair to the police. Okay. So the police come, say, no, you can't block it. You got to move it. Okay, that's fine. And I understand, like you understand, that we are in a community where the suffering is so great that one more thing is just the one more thing. So if you take it in, if you don't look at it as a, if you think about their reaction, the protesters or the basketball players, if you think about their reaction just from a, you know, what are they so upset about? This officer's being so nice. And you go, yeah, they really kind of escalated that. But then if you think about it from a, it's just one more thing, then you kind of can understand more why people are like, just your presence, Mr. Police Officer, just that gun, just your badge, just you having the audacity to show up while we do nothing. I mean, we are here bouncing a ball in the street doing nothing, and you have killed our sister. We don't want you to talk to us unless it is mandatory. We don't want you to suggest. We don't want you to direct. You go that way, we'll go this way. If we're not breaking the law, leave us alone. And so you feel that. But that being said, whatever you think, the person who most escalated it was a white male. And I noticed that the officer pushes him out of the way to get to the Black man.
I mean, I noticed that too. Yes.
Absolutely. And then, according to several people, you can see on the video, and I have not dissected the videos because for what? There's no justice around here anywhere. But they say that the young white man, not only, of course, we all hear him antagonizing the officer and escalating the situation, but he also, I think, hits him in the back of the head or hits someone, smacks him in the back of the head, throws the ball. So there are all these things, but somehow he's not the one who's arrested in the moment. This is exactly why we have to think about funding other organizations and removing that funding from police, because maybe people playing ball in the middle of the street is not the business of police. Maybe that's not police work. Maybe that's somebody else's work. Maybe there's another organization that should be funded to come and talk to these young men and say, hey, listen, you know what? We actually took the nets down everywhere because of COVID, and here's what's happening. Can we talk about what do y'all need? What do you want to do? Is there some other organization that should be responding? Why are we responding to basketball with a gun and a badge?
I mean, this is a woman who's been managing a memorial. I mean, she was wearing this
red jumpsuit.
This great red jumpsuit. I mean, that was probably what we all thought. Like, she's clearly not packing. She's clearly not packing.
Right.
Okay, so.
Let's just say this about Rosie, right? It's just so easy to kill us. It's just so easy to arrest us. It's just so easy to make us the bad guy. It's just so easy. And that's what we've been suffering from. And to your earlier point, you know, black women, it usually nobody is saying our names. Nobody is waiting outside the jail like they sat out there and waited for her, you know, release Miss Rosie and all of that. So that's what, and I don't think that the people in power understand that subconscious. We understand that they know what justice looks like because we see them provided to other people every day.
Well, and
it's just not afforded to us.
I mean, but we black women, we seem to always know what's at stake. I mean, I don't understand why black women are the only people in the country who seem to be voting 90 percentile. What's with that? What is it about black women that makes us vote even more than our brothers? What's up with that?
We're caregivers. I mean, we're caregivers. Go back to, you know, how we got into this country and what we had to do to stay alive and the choices we had to make to keep our families alive and the dances we had to dance and the things that we had to sacrifice physically, emotionally, spiritually. I mean, I think we still do it. I think we do that a lot of times at our own expense. And so we are constantly thinking about what is best for the greater good. You know, I mean, we are just generally not these selfish. We're not necessarily these selfish people. I mean, honestly, because Michelle, and I don't know if this is the place to say it, but I will. And it is to me. It's what I say all the time. We as slaves, and I know people hate that, like, oh, we don't want to go back to slavery.
Right.
We don't want to go back. And then there's Jim Crow.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, the problem, the people who don't want to go back to slavery, don't want to go back to Jim Crow, don't want to go to redline, and they don't want to talk about the discrimination in the school system. They don't want to talk about police. So they don't really want to talk about anything. So they already turned it off. So let's just go ahead and talk to the people who are still here.
Right. Talk. Speak right. On it. Speak on it.
So they're already gone.
This is a podcast. Speak on it.
Yes. Yes. So, you know, you think about the idea that the people you are, that the master would rip your child from your arms, take them and sell them, and that then when they had children, you would be required to care for, love on, bathe, feed their children. And we did that. We don't hear stories of people who retaliated and said, you know what, we're going to do something to their kids because they took mine, because you disrupted my family. I'm going to do this to yours. You don't hear those. You don't hear stories. You don't hear a whole bunch of stories about revenge of slaves. I mean, we hear about the Nat Turner revolt, but you
yes.
don't hear about black women who lost their children forever. Then
yep, you're right.
Taking somebody else's white baby and harming them, because that's not who we are. And we never have been. Even when we have not been afforded any level of humanity or justice, we have always been willing to give it. So that's why we show up to vote every time, because we are the ones who have always believed that someday we were going to tap into the best of. And we're still waiting for it. We are still waiting for the best of them to show up and do what that we know they can do. We know that it's in them. But we just keep, it's not enough. You know, but I think black women have a North Star. And other people are coming along, but not in the mass way that we have always been. And that just has to be acknowledged.
You know, my friends tease me hard because I'm a crier. Like I'm a tough babe, a tough, you know, this is a podcast. I can say it. I'm a tough bitch, but I'll cry
mm-hmm.
at the drop. I'll cry
mm-hmm.
at the drop of a hat. And you got me teared up because you
yeah.
are speaking on. Because one of my questions, which you just kind of sort of just answered, is what do you think that what is it about black women that you think we have a unique and particular lock on that is our joy and our strength?
I think we have been the mothers of everyone. I think we have had to care for everyone. I think we have had to always protect everyone. And sometimes to our men, to the men who loves us, that may look like, well, why would you do this? But they don't understand. We are negotiating. We have been negotiating your survival. We have been negotiating your existence. Every move we've made, it's never really been able to be just about us. So even when, as we have progressed in this country and all of a sudden we started hearing, well, Black women are getting the job, or Black women are, so now even when we get the jobs, we're looking around to make sure, is there a brother? Is there a brother I can hire? I want to make sure. Like, we never want to leave anybody behind. It is just who we are. We understand. I don't, it's just this innate thing. There's just something innate. And I'm not saying it's every one of us. Surely there are some of us who maybe not. But in mass, that's who we are. And I'm telling you, we have done that sometimes to our own detriment. And I think that's why, yeah, come on, you know it. I mean, even look at Brianna. I mean, I think about her.
I was just thinking about that. Girl, as you were talking about, like, the ex-boyfriend,
with the ex-boyfriend, trying to get away. She knew he wasn't good for her, right? Yeah, he may have loved her in his way. I don't know him. I imagine he did. She seems like she's somebody that there was nothing not to love about. Right. But how do we just listen? This is not good. But she's probably thinking, if I could just imagine, you know, he's in jail. He just needs somebody to talk to. He's calling me. I'm going to take the call. That's what we do to our own detriment. That's what we do. That's what we do.
That was Sadiqua Reynolds, President and CEO of Louisville Urban League. I'm Michelle Tyreen Johnson, and this was Race Unwrapped.
Race Unwrapped is produced by Michelle Tyreen Johnson for Louisville Public Media. Our senior producer is Laura Ellis. Allison Cross created our music. For more information, to contact us, or to support Race Unwrapped, visit WFPL.org/raceunwrapped.